Hello, and welcome to ICANN's Data Protection and Privacy Update webinar. This is Angelina Lopez, ICANN's Communications Manager from the Global Domains Division, and I will moderate today's webinar and the Adobe Connect chat room. Before we start, I'd like to remind everyone to please follow the ICANN's expected standards of behavior. You can find them in the link provided in the chat room. To facilitate global participation, we are providing interpretation services in Arabic, Chinese, French, Portuguese, Russian, and Spanish. Today's webinar will last 60 minutes, including a Q&A session at the end. This webinar is being recorded. Links to the recording and presentation materials will be posted on the ICANN Data Protection and Privacy section of our website. We will answer questions at the end of the webinar. However, you may ask your questions at any time via the Adobe Connect chat room simply by typing your name, your affiliation, company, or organization, along with your question in the box labeled Submit Questions Here. Instructions are also shown in the chat room. Lastly, I'd like to remind you to please mute your computers and phones. And with that, we will begin. Goran?
Thank you, Angelina. Good morning, at least for me. Hello, everybody, and thank you for joining today's webinar. We want to provide you with an update on recent data protection privacy activities. We'll be transparent and make sure everyone is on a level playing field. Clearly, GDPR will affect us all in one way or another. I'm really impressed with the community's efforts and the progress that has been made overall. This is a really big job, and I want to thank everyone for their hard work and contributions. We have received a lot of good input on potential models for compliance with GDPR and ICANN agreements. It looks like there is a growing support for some sort of tiered access model, which is called in Europe a layered model. There has also been a lot of talk about non-public access and accreditation, which are topics that require more discussions. In terms of engagement, we have had valuable discussions with many different parties, including ongoing dialogues with the Article 29 Working Group. I plan to send a letter to Article 29 Working Group and the European Union to consider forbearance on GDPR compliance. We will also notify the Governmental Advisory Committee and the United States government on that request. I also would like to take this opportunity to say that we have a grateful for all the discussions that have occurred over the past several weeks and the input we have received. Let's keep the conversations going, also inside the community. So, now to the webinar. First, Teresa Swinehart, who is responsible for coordinating our GDPR efforts, will talk about the process and provide an activity update. Then John Jeffrey is going to talk about our proposed interim models and share some preliminary comparison and how we're going to move forward from this point. We plan to leave plenty of time for questions and we'll do our best to answer as many as we can during the webinar. In the interest of efficiency, we are only going to take questions through the Adobe chat and ask you to submit one question at a time. That way we can make sure that we hear from as many as possible. If we don't have time to answer them now, we will come back to you in writing. With that, over to Teresa.
Thank you, Jörn. As many of you know, we posted the draft interim models on the 12th of January, and this followed several iterations of community discussions, community input and dialogue, including around the Hamilton memos that it posted. And we really want to thank the community for the tremendous input and comments on the draft models that we've received to date. It's really a demonstration of the outstanding community participation and collaboration in moving this process forward and finding the right path in that direction. In total, we received approximately 65 comments or proposed variations on models, and this is very much appreciated, and those are being posted on the website itself, so that's all available to everybody. We've also been asked to participate in several community discussions, including with the intellectual property constituency and commercial and business users constituency, with the Governmental Advisory Committee, with the contracted parties. And later today, we also have a meeting and call with the non-contracted party house here in Los Angeles. With that, we also wanted to ensure that we have a webinar in order to allow an opportunity for the broader community in the discussions as well. So with that, I'm going to turn this over to John Jeffrey, who's going to talk about some of the models and some of the variations that we started to see. With that, John, I'll turn it over to you.
Thanks, Teresa. So first thing we're going to do is put up on the screen, if you're on the Adobe chat, a graphic. And this graphic, if we can blow it up so that you can see as much of it as possible. The graphic is the proposed interim GDPR compliance models and selected community input from some of the models that we've received so far. And I'll go through and why it's these as opposed to some of the others. But as I understand it, and I haven't counted them, but we have about 65 models that have been submitted.
Comments
and models that have been submitted. Eight of the models and ICANN's models are all graphed on this chart. And then we have a second document that we'll show you that breaks it out into a matrix, which shows some of the key factors and how they compare across those various models. But if you look at this graphic, starting in the bottom right corner and looking at the axes, if you look at due process only and minimal data, you start in the bottom corner, and that's looking at the EFF model or close to the ICANN model 3, and some elements of the ECHO model are close to that. And then as you go across, almost in a line to the far corner, where we look at full thick data and we look at what's closer to the current who is, you can see the other end of that spectrum. Now, an important element of this is that it isn't in scale. So if you put the actual current who is model on this graph, you would go much further out to the top right. And so that's one thing to look at. And then, of course, focusing on the elements along the way, we tried to show some of the key elements. So if you look at the left access, the full public access, case-by-case access, self-certification, accredited access, and across the bottom, minimal data, reduced data, and full thick data. So this is an attempt to put those in sort of model and show how close they really are. And remember, there's a key element to all of this, which is almost all of these models contain the tiered or layered model at the very core of it. So the starting point is already, from the very start, much different than the current who is. So there would be a set of data collected and then a different set of data publicly made available. And of course, one of the key elements as we look across these models is how that information, the information that's not public, would be provided to those who have a legitimate purpose for the use of that data. Let's go to, and we'll make both of these, this document and this graphic and the document that we're going to show you next, available after this webinar. So let's go to the graphic, and we'll start to talk a little bit about show all of the different elements that are being measured, and this will be very hard to see, I think, just based on the scale of it in the Adobe room. But wanted to just point out a few things about this. So what's the purpose of our doing a paper like this? We're seeing really a fantastic response from the community. A lot of very skilled and complex responses through the models and the comments. And we wanted to make sure there was some way to show comparisons across it, both in the grid of how they fit, but also in comparing individual elements of it. And so with this matrix, we're trying to show a direct comparison between the various models and what elements of each of those models change across some of those key factors. And the goal of this is to show not the differences, which are significant, but actually begin to show the common approach that many of them have, because we believe and are encouraged by these submissions to see that there may be a way to take us toward a single approach to who is and who is compliant as we go through the next phase of the analysis and the selection of an interim model. Another really important part to stress, as you start to look at this data, don't expect all of it will be correct. So we've done our best in a very short period of time to synthesize it, but literally every time we look at it, we adjust something else, and we would appreciate and hope that you will look at the individual models you submitted, the ones that you care about or understand, the ones that you don't, and make sure we're collecting the information in the matrix in the best possible way so that we can be as correct as possible in making an analysis from the collected and collated data. So part of what's on this is the 5 GDPR compliance models that have been proposed by the community. All of those are included. And we've also included the 3 models, or 4, depending on how you count them, models submitted in the ICANN proposal. So the 1, 2A, 2B, and C, or 3. And as we said before, one of the critical elements is how these are, although different, they're all coming from the same base, and they're all centering around a single type of set of matrix information. One of the key points is the layered tiered access, but the second one is that we're seeing that most of the models now support a continued collection, transfer, and escrow of the full thick WHOIS data. Now, there are some outliers, and you can clearly see that, but the majority of the submitted models now are approaching it from that angle. The other thing to realize is we've not received indications from the DPAs yet that we need to approach the full thick WHOIS model, and so the principle that ICANN started with is that if possible, we should remain as close to the current WHOIS model as we can, recognizing that some elements of that model might not be consistent with the GDPR. What haven't we covered? The areas where we think there could be more discussion, although there's a common approach emerging on some of the elements, we also have a breakdown and concerns about whether these changes would apply only to the European Economic Area or whether it would apply globally. That's still a pending question and an important one. And whether the interim changes should apply to registrations of natural persons or registrations of both natural and legal persons. And that's an area of focused discussion in some of these models and comments. And we think that there could be more attention and more analysis around whether or not the registrant's email address would be included in the public WHOIS. And so that seems to be a variance point across many of the models as well. Again, just to repeat, the purpose of this non-paper is not to be conclusory or to point to a specific conclusion. It's to make sure we're capturing the differences, we're capturing the similarities, and trying to drive it toward finding a final interim compliance model. And so we really appreciate any thoughts or suggestions that you have about how to improve this, what we might be missing on it, what might be inaccurate or incorrect, or what could be perhaps a data point that we've not yet captured across. And with that, I'll pause, and I think we could go to questions.
Thank you, John. As a reminder, we will answer questions in English via the Adobe chat room. We also have interpreters who will translate the webinar's questions and answers, whether they're in Arabic, Chinese, English, French, Portuguese, Russian, or Spanish. If you have questions, you still have time to type your question into the label box, Submit Questions Here. We will make every effort to answer questions in the allotted time, and as a reminder, a recording of the webinar will be made available and posted on the ICANN Data Protection Privacy section of our website. Should we run out of time, or if you have additional questions after the webinar has ended, please email gdpr@icann.org. Our first question comes from Thomas Ricketts, ECO Association. Joran will answer that question.
So, hello, Thomas. The question is, why does ICANN only engage bilaterally with the Article 29 Working Party? Why are the contracted parties not invited to the table? Since the last 6 months, I have encouraged everybody to have their own contacts with the Article 29 group. I think I've gone on record that several times. I thought it was important for all parts of the community, contracted parties, civil society, intellectual property, to have that contact, to be able to tell their version of their reasoning behind their views on GDPR. When people have asked me, I help with contact names, but I don't think it's proper for me at ICANN.org to sort of represent the parts of the community. The discussion we're having with Article 29 is really to channeling your questions that we got from them. If you look at this matrix, for instance, we're presenting today, you will see there are some questions that needs to be answered. And we try to build up a good relationship with the Article 29 from ICANN and ICANN.org. But I hope that you have been contacted by myself. I think that would have been very helpful and very fruitful for yourself. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Ashley Dupont. Her question is, which models have received the most support from contracted parties who are actually liable for the data being processed? I know the ECO model has received wide support from contracted parties, and this wide base of support should mean that the model is given more weight in ICANN's consideration.
We don't really think about this as a popularity contest, because we're actually talking about being compliant to a law. At the end of this, which we talked about for the last 6 months, we are in the unusual circumstances that I, as the CEO of ICANN, has to figure out a way how ICANN.org can be compliant with the law. We have constructed a process for input of that, and we've been I hope we've been transparent in that. Some people think that we move too fast, some people think that we move too slow, and they're probably right, both of them. The thing is that what we're trying to do now is to get the best legal discussion out, where we have been trying to look at the different components of the different proposals, so we also know. Remember that that's also a part of the sort of reasoning why we can have a whole system in the first place. The user cases, the requisite for the law that you have to have a purpose on that, and you've helped a lot with that. It creates a legal guidance for us to proceed. But it's not a popularity contest, or it's not a negotiation in that sense. With that said, I, over the last couple of weeks and months, have engaged in several discussions with, if I may say, different parts of the community that over time has, for a long period of time, not really been on speaking terms. One of the things you can see in this documentation we're sending out is that those parties are today much closer than they might think. There are things to be discussed. And I ask you to come together and discuss those issues. I'm very much in favor if the community can agree on the last parts of this, and we moved a long way over the last 6 months. We will be very, very thankful, and that will be important. So it's not a popularity within different parts of the community, but we would be very popular with me if you agreed on the census. Thank you.
Our next question comes from Taylor R.W. Bentley, Canada GAC. Is the GAC model plotted on the graphic meant to represent the proposed hybrid outline in the GAC's most recent comments? John?
Yes. This is an effort to capture the elements that were submitted by the GAC in their comments, and I believe they called it Model 4. And so this is an effort to capture the elements of that. Specifically for the questioner, if you see elements of that that don't look like they capture that, we'd be very interested in making corrections. Thank you.
Our next question comes from Thomas Rickert. Why does ICANN continue to only look at disclosure of data? The collection of data and other processing also requires analysis, as recently pointed out in the letter dated January 29th from the European Commission. John?
If I understand the question correctly, it makes an assumption that's not the case. So we're attempting to not just look at collection of data, but we're trying to look at the whole spectrum of how the WHOIS information is collected, how it's used, how it's published, how it would be accessed by parties for the portions of it that are collected but are not published.
question comes from Amadou Abril. Hi, Abril. So I can confirm that registries have negotiated a different WHOIS output with NPAs and with IC.
This is the RMRB. I'm not aware, what they negotiate with other ones, I'm not a part of. So maybe that question should be raised to the people who's actually doing negotiations. With that said, and we are in a part of this process, again, it's a compliance issue for ICANN.org. We are not talking about policies here. We've said many times, I'm going to repeat myself, it's important that we be talking about is compliance both to a law in Europe but also with the aspect of our contracts. We cannot, local law always supersedes our contracts. That's why it's a compliance issue for us. I think it's extremely important, but that's more of a personal view, that the community has to continue the important policy discussions about who is system on the side of this. That's why we call this a sort of interim solution until the community continues its works about who its policies that is already happening within the community.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Michaeli Nalon. Is ICANN going to acknowledge that it is a data controller? John?
Yes, so there's never been a question about whether ICANN is a controller. The question is about how ICANN is classified as a controller. And so there are different types of controllers. There's joint controllers, co-controllers, et cetera. And so one of the things to understand on this particular point is you look into how we would classify ourselves or how the DPAs might classify us, is that ICANN has factual control and is a data controller only for exceptional cases, for example, audits, inspections during compliance, transitioning of domain names in places such as that. There are someone who requires through our contracts with you, our contracted party, the use of that data. But it's also important to realize the registries and registrars and ICANN have distinct and different purposes in dealing with the registrant data, and that there's no overall or joint determination of the purposes and means of the WHOIS services among registries, registrars, and ICANN.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Amadou Abril, I Abril. His question is, can we still submit a model? Negotiating with DPAs has taken some time.
We are getting closer to where we have to make a decision. I think we will give time, of course. We continue the discussions with the DPAs. We are also sending a letter to the DPAs, Article 29 use, for recognizing the fact this will take, whatever the solution will be, it will take some time for the contracted parties to implement. You know, any input on the data received, but it's really hard for us to say that we can take new things into account. As I think JJ mentioned, we received close to 80 comments and different varieties a couple of days ago, and my team is working around the clock really to break down. And we have received very good comments I think that, you know, always submit, that's important, but right now we have said to the community that we are stopped that on Friday. We are analyzing things and we're getting closer to where we have to make a decision. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Our next question from Maxim Alzoba. What was the reason to exclude registrant ID from publishing? It is not passport, just alphanumeric entry unique for that TLD.
So I'm not sure I understand the question exactly. If you don't mind perhaps resubmitting it, we can come back and answer. But I don't think I think it just disappeared from my screen, so I can't see it anymore. But I think there's there's an element of the question that's implying that we've made decisions about it and we're still interested in your input on it.
Thank you. I'd like to remind people when they ask questions in the chat room to please start with the word question. This way we know fully that you are asking a question. Thank you. Our next question comes from Maxim Aldoba Fatih. Does GDPR recognize special role of LEA, the law enforcement agencies, outside of EU in their respective jurisdictions on their soil? Usually they are exempt from some of personal data protection laws locally and local law enforcement, non-EU. Add legal requirements, and the clarification to the question is, are they valid reasons for companies to collect data?
Yeah, so thank you for the question. And I believe it's somewhat complicated by the fact that GDPR is attempting to put a set of rules around the collection and use of data. In this particular case, where there could be a legitimate use related to a law enforcement agency outside the jurisdiction, we would expect that there would be some recognition of that. But that's a question really for the DPAs in the end. But one of the things you'll notice in some of the models that are being submitted is that we're looking at ways that we could have a mechanism for the display of non-public data that would be included in the WHOIS. For law enforcement agencies that were seeking to gain access for that for a legitimate purpose.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Steve Del Bianco. Do you expect specific guidance from the Article 29 Working Party regarding WHOIS?
Hi, Steve. This is Jorin. The word specific could mean many different things. If you ask for specific, the answer is no. It's built into the system, and I'm saying this with all the respect for the Article 29. DPAs cannot give specific advice before they make decisions. It's actually against how they do things. It's also against the law. The way we're dealing with this is that we were building a relationship with the Article 29 group where we share with them and we are trying to be as neutral as possible. That's why we also asked you to contact the Article 29 group to give the different perspectives of the law. When we said that's why we say we can continue the dialogue with them to provide them with as much information as possible for them to know more about the WHOIS systems, our policies, our way of working with them. So the word specific, I would say no. The sort of interesting thing is that they cannot do that today. But after the new law is fully in place, they can do much more because Article 29 group is a sort of, I'm hesitate to say it, but it's sort of a voluntarily cooperation between the DPAs in Europe. That will be formalized with the new law where they can issue more specific guidelines. Something that I think most people think is a great idea. But on the other hand, we have to make some decisions before the law is enacted. So in that sense, that's 22. Thank you.
Thank you, Jorin. Next question from Arnaud. What is the current ICANN timeline for GDPR compliance? John?
So very important question. We're aware that the GDPR law is not new in its whole. There are elements of it that are already part of the law, and this is why it's an important consideration to move as quickly as possible. But the law, which requires certain elements relating to, and we give certain rights to the DPAs regarding enforcement, changes in May. And so the timeline for compliance will be tied into the May timeframe. We'll be looking at an interim model for compliance toward the May timeframe, but we're currently in discussions with the contracted parties and others about how we could enforce compliance in that time window, particularly in light of the fact that we're still trying to find the appropriate model. We're also intending to communicate with the authorities about whether there could be additional time before enforcement of the law might be applied to who is. But we have no direct answers and don't expect them in the short run on those questions.
Thank you. Next question is from Paul McGrady. What is the legal basis for any argument that the GDPR should be effective outside of domain names in the EU zone or for domain names anywhere that are not registered, I believe that's what he means to say, by natural persons? Joran? Sean?
So there isn't really a legal basis if the question is very narrowly tied to are we caused to require legally persons' data outside of the European Economic Area to be restricted. There is a complicated set of issues that come around this in terms of how it can be maintained as a system by both the registrars and the registries, and how ICANN could create a compliance model around that. And so those are some of the questions that are in the current model discussion and that we are seeking additional input about. As I outlined at the very beginning when we said there are still some key questions that we have to deal with in terms of looking at an interim compliance model, one of those is who it applies to and how the system could take that in.
Just building on what John is talking about is that if you take a look on the we're going to publish that now, you can compare the different models. You would see that the way we set it up is you can sort of take out and put in. And just to give an example is that if you look at the ECHO model and compare that to our model 2B, they would actually be quite close in some features, because in the ECHO model some things are optional. And if they became a standard feature, in particular transfer registered data to registry for a variety of purposes, including compliance with consensus policies, such as inter-registrar transfers, FICOIS, et cetera, that would actually bring them together. So we have been, you know, if something is called optional in the model, we have to take it as a standard. And it's important that you can actually pick and choose. So think about it as a pizza. Our model starts with, it's a Hawaii, you take away the pineapple, it actually ends with another pizza with another name. That's how close the different models are. And I think it's good to recognize that. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Chris Lewis Evans. What is your current timeline for publishing the interim model?
We are working 24 hours a day, more or less, and I'm not joking, to compile this. Our planning is to come up with distribute our decision, how ICANN org will be compliant, and the effect of that on our compliance as well in the middle of this month. The reasons why we have this timeline is because we also continue the dialogue with the Article 29 group to make sure that we are, you know, to not being sure, but knowing that we're on the right track. And we're also trying to give some time to civil society, to intellectual property, to anti-abuse, to cybersecurity, to contracted parties, to have dialogues in between themselves. Because we're still hoping, because now when we see how close we are, or the community are, on something that's been so heavily debated, that there could be a bigger agreement between the different sides of the community in this important issue. So, but we are well aware that we have to publicize a decision in the next coming weeks.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Jim Prendergast. Will contracted parties have to use the model ICANN chooses, or will ICANN also approve community-submitted proposals that can also be implemented? And if they can implement community-developed ICANN-approved proposal, What is the timeline for ICANN approving this?
This is a very good question, Jim, and I want to answer it. There can only be one model, and it's something that we've been talking about for a while. So, first of all, this is not a policy. This is an interim solution because of a European law, and in our way we set things up is that the policies can never supersede any local law. So we're going to choose one model for ICANN org to be compliant, and for symmetric reasons we're going to use the same for our own compliance. The only way that could happen after that you come up with your own model is that you, according to the ICANN principles, can show that there is the local DPA, which is very hard in this environment, to have a different ID than the other DPAs. So I think for transparency and for clarity, it's going to be one model. And also remember that I'm bound, my Bible, and I'm not saying this anything else than it's, I'm bound by the policies set by the community. There are policies set by the community how to address the who is, for instance, in the contracts. I'm not the person who can go away from that. I'm actually quite happy to a lot of extent, the comments we've had has been understanding the differences in compliance and policies. Most of the comments has actually been about compliance with our contracts rather than trying to drive a bus through the policy process. It's been very, very good, and I'm very happy about the quality of the answers we get in. So I hope that the community will enhance its work and its policy work to adopt a new world that GDPR is in effect. We will see this many times over the next couple of years where privacy laws, data protection laws, and other ones will have an effect on our ability or your ability to make policies. And one of the things we are working on internally is to make sure that we can engage with the community or help the community and inform the community as much as we can when this effect happens around the world. For instance, there is proposal for e-privacy legislation in Europe that we probably need to be aware of a little bit earlier in the process. Thank you.
Thank you, Jan. Our next question comes from Jan McCurler. His question is, which model is ICANN recommending for registrars?
Yes, just to remind you where we are in the process, we've currently collected these models, including five community ones, the three or four ICANN models. We've had over 65 comments. We're attempting to collate that and present that to make sure we understand what's been submitted from the community and that we understand the differences and similarities across those. So we've not selected a model for the registrars. We're in fact asking for additional input to be able to provide that interim compliance model before the community would go back and look at policy processes or other things to form a more formal proposal in the future.
Thank you, John. Our next question comes from Michael Pelage. Has Dan Halloran, as ICANN's Chief Data Protection Officer, undertaken a DPIA? When will Dan, in his capacity as CDPO, participate in these public sessions? John?
Yeah, and I know, Michael, you've asked this question before, so I know that you know the answer, but I'll answer it so everyone else knows too. Dan's role inside the company as Chief Data Protection Officer relates to not being the data protection officer for all the registries and registrars and the contracted parties, but relates specifically to ICANN, the organization. And so his focus has been primarily geared toward all of the systems that ICANN has inside and making sure that we're also meeting compliance requirements as it relates to those. I think there's another question down the queue that becomes part of this, so I'll sort of join them together. I think Dean Marks had asked, does ICANN intend to request a formal DPIA from one or more of the DPAs for selected interim model as recommended by Hamilton? And I think that's you know, part of the question is, are we looking at DPIAs? Are we approaching that? If you remember, part of the Hamilton memo outlined that there are certain circumstances where we may benefit from filing a DPIA, but that that isn't necessarily the most beneficial thing to do at this particular time. So we're continuing to evaluate that, and we'll look very carefully both at the community's advice on this matter, at Hamilton's advice, and how we would go from an interim compliance model to a more formalized model, and whether there would be an opportunity or a benefit to go through a DPIA.
Thank you. Mr. Our next question from Keith Drazik. Wouldn't ICANN be considered a controller through its role approving and enforcing the compliance model? John?
Yeah, so Keith, I appreciate the question. I think there's continued to be confusion when I say ICANN is not, we believe ICANN is not a joint controller. And I think that that's been confused to say that ICANN is not a controller of data. And I'd like to be really clear, we understand that ICANN has a role in this, both in requiring through agreements that you, the registries and registrars and the community participants, have a view on how who is works inside of our system and is applied through contracts. And there's been a long history of how who is works both before ICANN and through the ICANN contracts. But as it relates to ICANN as a data controller, we're just questioning whether the designation of joint controller is the right term. And there could be a determination that we are a joint controller, but we have a question about, in light of the way that ICANN uses data and that use is different and distinct from how registrars and registries would use that data. And in particular, ICANN's use of that data for audit, inspection, transitioning domains, we think there's distinct similarities in how you use it, but there's also very distinct differences. So we know that we have a role as a controller. The question that I'm raising and the question that I think still has to be evaluated as part of this overall is, what type of controller is ICANN, and how much do you want us to be controlling the data that you collect? And what would be our role in that data? We assume that some of the data that is collected by registries and registrars are used for purposes that are outside of the way that you would want ICANN to control that data. And so there may be a role for some sort of controller agreement or relationship at some point as we go through the models.
Thank you, John. Our next question comes from Ashley of Tukau. How does ICANN plan to proceed if its chosen model is not deemed by contracted parties to conform to GDPR requirements? Meaning, how will ICANN proceed if there is a conflict between ICANN's legal assessments and the legal assessments of contracted parties? Yoran?
I can start and then lead over to JJ. Could I go back on something and say that one of the reasons why we're presenting this chart is that you will see that it's not that easy to say that you will accept or not accept a model. Actually, most of the model contains the same solution to the problem. You know, 6 months ago, or for a long time, it's been discussing about tiered access. The difference between the models are not that big, which is one of the reasons why we point that out. There is a big line between the current version of OIS and what will be the new version of OIS in the compliance method, and that is tiered access or layered access. That is a big difference from the current OIS system. So to what extent we're talking about it, which data is going to go in the system, how that information is going to transfer within the systems, in registrars and registries, and how are the accreditation system actually going to work in practice, how we're going to accreditate organizations into the system. Apart from that, it's very hard to say that, you know, you choose one model, because you might say that I choose one model and we add something or take something away. And you sort of a pizza, you end up with something else. So my hope is, of course, that everybody will understand why we then choose certain components and how we tend to solve that. There are also the questions after that. That's the sort of model, or that's what we're going to enforce from compliance, because that is what we think and then believe, with all the input we've had, in the transparent process we've had, is a sweet spot, if you excuse my language, between compliance with the law and compliance with the policies set by the community. That's where we're trying to find that. And that's why we're giving you the time to give us input. That's why we have the dialogue with so many to find those. But if we go back sort of to a discussion, that model is better than the other model, we sort of go away from the fact that there is a lot of agreement between the models, which we're trying to show with this documentation. JJ, you want to add?
Yeah, I think that what Joran's saying is we'd like to avoid the hypothetical that you're calling out. We don't want to be in a position where we're forcing a model on contracted parties that they don't like or understand. On the other hand, we can't guarantee that every contracted party will agree with our approach, and we can't guarantee that every contracted party will believe that they're compliant with the law based on the approach that we select. And so we will have to consider how a conflicts of law provision is dealt with and where we land if there is a disagreement about compliance with law as opposed to a disagreement about how the model applies more generally.
Thank you, John. Our next question comes from Jeff Newman. Will ICANN assist contracted parties in the case that the ICANN interim model is deemed to be non-compliant and there is an enforcement action taken? John?
So we assume that we're all in this together in terms of ICANN being a controller of data and you also being controllers of data if you're a contracted party. So yes, absolutely, we're in this discussion. I'm not sure what the word assist exactly means, but we're certainly going to be participating in that discussion and working with you in terms of making sure that our model remains compliant and consistent with the law and with where we can the interpretation of the DPA.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Amadou Abril, Hi Abril from CORE. Some registries, such as .cat, already have an EU data protection legislation compliance system approved by national DPA and by ICANN. We understand that no interim model would apply to them. And additionally, could that model be taken as the solution for other registries in the same jurisdiction?
I mean, to say it's something is approved from a regular perspective when it's never been legally tested. The only way to test a law like this or any law in Europe is that it actually goes, the DPAs goes out and say that you're wrong. They never sort of go out and say that you're right. And then if you don't like that, you take that to court. I don't know if .cat has gone through that process. My knowledge right now, but I could be wrong, is that the closest we've received from a country is the from the Netherlands, which we received, I think, at the time of the South African meeting we had, which has been a very good guidance to our work as well. But you have to also to look into this from an overall perspective when it comes to ICANN. You know, I'm continue to talk about the policy set by the community as it's an important point, but there's been a lot of development just over the last week. I would like you to point you, for instance, to the letter from the GAC to us with input and also proposals for their own model, where the governments of the world has come together and in through the GAC has provided us with a good written reasoning why there could be a whole system. And that's fairly important, as we didn't really have a WHOIS policy, in general WHOIS policy before. Bits and pieces of it, yes. Bits and pieces that direct to our contract, but not this balancing between the sort of right to privacy versus our balancing the need for information for instance, police forces. We can also add the information we received from the U.S. government and also from the three commissioners about the reasoning behind there has to be an WHOIS system. These are important things going in a sort of legal way because it proves a point to, I don't know if JJ is now going to look strange at me, a sort of protection for the contracted parties where governments have stood up and said this is important. Also pointed to the letter we received from the Article 29 group, which we were very grateful for earlier in the end of last year. So we are building up, with the help of you, with the help of GAC, and the help of governments, we are building a sort of platform for the WHOIS systems going forward. That is what we take into account also when we make those, when we're going to make those decisions going forward. But the other question is, I mean, I want to emphasize that there is a room for the different sides in this discussion to come together and talk about some of the few remaining issues that is outstanding when it comes to data collection, when it comes to accreditation system, when it comes to some extent jurisdiction, because I'm also knowing that, for instance, the contracted parties knows more about the practicalities of implementation of this. And the different user groups, including civil society, has more knowledge about the harm or the positive with this information. So I'm again reaching out my, I will fly anywhere or go anywhere if I'm needed to facilitate such a discussion and provide the expertise and knowledge we have about it. I think that the community has come such a long way in just a couple of months that I hope there will be a bigger agreement. Sort of, if the different parties doesn't agree, it sort of forces me to make a decision, which I, to some extent, think that the community is better off finalizing. There are a few things left. Thank you.
Thank you, Jeroen. At this time, I also want to state that we're doing a five-minute warning. We can take a couple more questions, but as a reminder, if we can't get to your question, you can email it to gdpr@icann.org. Thank you. Our next question comes from Bradley Silver. After the interim model is chosen, if a registrar believes that their implementation of it will result in noncompliance with GDPR, will they be entitled and are required to invoke the WHOIS conflict procedure? Or do you anticipate that the compliance obligations will continue to be suspended for a period of time? John?
Yeah, and so just as a reminder, no matter what interim model ICANN selects, we cannot force contracted parties to violate laws. And so at the very heart of this is, you know, the principle that ICANN can't and won't make you violate a law. So if there's a determination by a contracted party that they believe they're in violation of the law, we would ask them to go through a process to provide information about that, to prove through documentation, as we've done with the conflicts policy, that there is an application of that law that you believe would be applied against you and would make you unable to conform to your legal obligation inside of our contract. So, you know, how that is going to be best maintained is part of this discussion. We're certainly interested in input on how the conflicts policy would be utilized and what a process might be for that as it specifically relates to GDPR. But if you have concerns right now or you have indications and evidence that a model, the model, as we move toward an interim compliance model, is incorrect, we want that information, we want to understand it, and we want to evaluate the input that you're receiving that indicates that you would be violating the law.
Thank you, John. Our next question comes from Richie Funden. Oh, I'm sorry. Our next question, I'm caught up now, apologize, is coming from Luke Super. If I don't believe the toppings chosen by ICANN on a pizza, that was the reference, are implementable, can I, as a registrar, make my own pizza with ingredients from each of the pizzas proposed by ICANN?
Thank you. My communication department has already looked at me as knowing less things about communication, adding a pizza discussion to this one, so I will take the fifth or something and say that I will not comment on pizzas. But I will, of course, to my communications department's delight. I mean, look about this. There is a pizza. The content of this pizza is decided by the community. There are different bits, different parts of this on that pizza. We're trying to take away as few as possible toppings on that pizza, still, and want to be compliant with the law. I, with this hope that I will figure out something else to talk about than pizzas, because I think that will be another rabbit hole I'm going down in, so sorry about that. But think about it as something else, and I will ask communication to come up with a better analogy.
I want to just add, as a big fan of pizza, I like the analogy. I think it's a good one for us understanding this. But this is your time to comment on the toppings, right? This is, we want your input on what those toppings are, how we're going to form that interim compliance model. So I think, you know, this, after it's ordered, it gets harder for all of us, right? Especially the contracted parties who are going to be trying to implement these models.
Thank you, gentlemen. Our last question comes from Richie Funden. Would ICANN not agree that any community developed policy that would violate the law if implemented or continued is actually void?
Thank you. I mean, that's the perspective we're in. The policy set by the community is deemed to be in violation with the GDPR. And that's why it's a compliance issue. And that's the whole exercise we're going through. If you again, look at the sort of chart that we have on the Adobe room right now, you would see up in the right corner is the current OS. And then you see a line, and that line actually means a tiered or layered access to the system, which means that our thought process right now, and as we communicated for a while, is that the GDPR will have an effect on the OS system. We said the next step of that will be tiered or layered access. And we look into the purpose of why we have a WHOIS, the user cases of the WHOIS. And so I wouldn't say they're void because the policies still exist. But as I said in the beginning of this call, I think it's important for the community to come back and look at the policies under the impact of GDPR and other parts of legislation. But that lies in the hands of the community, not ICANN.
The only thing I'd add is the question assumes some things, right, that there's a community-developed policy on who is and that this has been implemented in some way or would be implemented in some way like that. So one of the issues is who is much older than ICANN, and historical origins of it come to us, and we have applied it through the agreements. But there isn't a policy that's being voided. There's a set of practices and contractual terms that are now no longer consistent with the European law, and that's why most of the models are already approaching one of the fundamental elements of it, which is not all of the collected data may be shown. And so now we're at a point where how do we take that practice, that WHOIS policy that's been small p, not a community-developed policy, but how do we take that policy and transform it to something that is meaningful and useful for the legitimate uses that have been identified through this process of that data?
Thank you. That was our final question of today's webinar. Thank you for everybody who joined. I would like to remind you that if you still have questions, you can email them to gdpr@icann.org. We will also be posting links to the recording and presentation materials on the ICANN Data Protection and Privacy website section of our website. Thank you, everybody.